Amateur Radio Newsline Report Number 1851, with the release date of February 1st, 2013, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. The FCC turns down a petition for reconsideration on its report to Congress about ham radio emergency communications. The 2013 Global Amateur Radio Emergency Conference to be held this June in Zurich, Switzerland. And ham radio assistance in the Australian flooding begins as Tasmanian brushfire communications winds down. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline Report Number 1851. Coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Charleston, West Virginia, here is Jim Dameron, NATMW.
The FCC has turned down a petition for reconsideration on the text of its report to Congress dealing with amateur radio and how land use restrictions might interfere with emergency communications. Mark Abramovich, NT3V, is here with the details.
The FCC's Scott Stone, Deputy Chief of the Mobility Division in the Wireless Telecommunications Bureau, responded to the petition from James Wedby, N0ECN of suburban Kansas City, and Stone's legal language was pretty direct. Essentially, the matter is decided, and Wedby should stop wasting the FCC's time. In his reasoning for refusing Wedby's petition, the FCC, Stone says the division, which rejected his first appeal of the matter, was within its rights to do so without any further public hearing. Stone also stated in legal terms that Wedby engaged in a, quote, frivolous statutory interpretation, unquote, of the FCC's regulations, especially those stemming from PRB1, which authorized limited preemption of state and local regulations governing amateur station facilities, including antennas and support structures. But those regulations don't extend, as many of us know, to private codes, covenants, and restrictions known as CC&Rs, including homeowner association rules that restrict amateur radio facilities. However, 2001, the FCC left open the door on prohibiting CC&Rs from interfering with amateur radio if Congress so decided it should do so. The latest chapter in this ongoing debate was launched in February 2012 when President Obama signed the Middle Class Tax Relief and Job Creation Act of 2012. Now, that bill also included a provision requiring the FCC to report to Congress on the uses and capabilities of amateur radio service communications in emergencies and disaster relief. It also directed the study identify impediments to enhanced amateur radio service communications and make recommendations regarding the removal of such impediments, including, quote, the effects of unreasonable or unnecessary private land use restrictions on residential antenna installations, unquote. Now, the FCC record shows Wedby filed comments pretty quickly, claiming CC&Rs violated sections of the Communications Act. He also demanded the commission issue a legal decision called a declaratory judgment, essentially asking the FCC to rule without any further hearings or delays that CC&Rs were indeed an impediment to amateur radio operations, causing controversy for amateur radio and were unenforceable. The FCC denied Wedby's petitions, saying that was going to be addressed in its report to Congress. But Wedby kept at it, asking the FCC to reconsider. When the FCC issued its report to Congress last August, it stated there was no overwhelming public comment supporting any problems related to CC&Rs and amateur radio. The FCC's Stone finally addressed Wedby's appeal petition in a January 25th letter, in which he explained the report to Congress essentially trumped Wedby's appeal and rendered the matter, using a legal term, moot, or essentially of little value or meaning, given the FCC's findings in the report to Congress. Amateur Radio Newsline made several attempts to reach Wedby, but was unsuccessful as we went to air with this report. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mark Abramovich, NT3V, in Philadelphia.
At airtime, it's not known if Wedby plans to file any further appeals on this matter. You can read the entire text of this FCC decision online in PDF format at tinyurl.com/petition-turned-down. IARU Region 1 has announced this year's Global Amateur Radio Emergency Conference, or GAREC 2013, to be held in Zurich, Switzerland from June 25th through the 28th. Among the draft topics to be discussed are the relevance of amateur radio emergency communication in the first world and the HamNet high-speed data network. There will also be presentations from the three regions of the IARU and talks by groups with recent experience in disaster relief communications. General information on GAREC 2013, including information on the venue, registration fees, and tentative agenda, and the registration forms, it's all available online at www.garec2013.ch. This website will be updated frequently to keep all updated with the latest news and program changes. You may also email to info@garec2013.ch for updates. Flooding has hit the Australian state of Queensland. This as ex-tropical cyclone Oswald that had already caused record flooding has moved south. Jim Linton, VK3PC, is chairman of the IARU Region 3 Disaster Communications Committee. He tells Amateur Radio Newsline that as this disaster unfolds, a picture of emergency communications provided by amateurs is starting to emerge. According to Linton, several high-frequency links have been requested to be set up by the Ham Radio Emergency Response Group, WISEN, by the Queensland Water Police. These links are to connect the city of Brisbane to Cairns. WISEN's role is expected to expand in the coming days. As this newscast is being prepared, four people are reported to have died and others are reported missing. Many thousands have been left homeless and taking shelter in relief centers as the widespread flooding, which included tornadoes, is continuing. Meantime, ham radio assistance by WISEN in the Tasmanian brush fires has now come to an end, as we hear in this report from the Wireless Institute of Australia's Ham Radio News Service.
WISEN in Tasmania finally stood down after 20 continuous days of operation. Although the two major fires, which started on the 3rd of January, are still active, one being classified as contained and the other being controlled, operations at the Associated Incident Management Centre at Cambridge near Hobart Airport has been wound back. The days serviced by WISEN and other southern Tasmanian amateurs varied between 12 and 24 hours. WISEN Tasmania South Operations Coordinator Rod Finlayson, VK7TRF, reports that 24 amateurs contributed to the effort, totalling 666 hours at the radio desk, plus time and logistical support, keeping up the supply of operators to the task. Seven operators did in excess of 45 hours each, including three more than 60 hours and one working a total of almost 80 hours. Initially, there were two operators on each of the two networks, but this was wound back to one on each day after 10 days.
For those who may not be aware, WISEN is an acronym for Wireless Institute Civil Emergency Network. It is described as a group of Australian amateur radio operators trained to assist in emergency situations. Their job is to provide emergency and safety communications when normal communications do not exist or are inadequate. Some breaking news in the world of DX. Marion Island should be on the air before the start of summer in the northern latitudes. This according to reports that South African radio amateur David Hartzenberg, ZS1BCE, has been appointed to be the new radio technician to that rare location for 1 year between April of this year and May of 2014. Hartzenberg is expected to depart from Cape Town on April 15th, and his amateur radio operations are expected to begin about 4 weeks later. Currently, he does not have a ZS8 call sign, but plans to apply for ZS8D. Once set up, his operations will be on single sideband on most high-frequency bands. And lest we forget to mention, his QSL manager will be Pierre Tromp, ZS1HF, who just happens to have been the last operator from Marion Island using the call ZS8M. And we'll have more DX news for you to hear near the end of this week's newscast. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including WMRP Low Power FM, serving Mundy Township, south of Flint, Michigan. Tired of hearing this when you tune your favorite ham radio band? That's the sound made by a nearby plasma television set. And now Europe is starting to set some standards to make it a thing of the past. Philo Kutz, DL9KCE in Weyburn, Germany, reports that a European specification or recommendation on the limitation of the emissions of plasma TVs between 150 kHz and 30 MHz was approved in the last meeting of the Comité International Special des Perturbations Radioélectriques. Even though it does not have the same legal implications as a regular electromagnetic compatibility standard, it does show the plasma industry what could be part of one in the future. It should be noted that this new recommendation is the result of work started in 2007 by an electromagnetic compatibility working group of IARU Region 1. A non-commercial FM station in Puerto Rico has been dinged $8,000. This after the FCC found that it was incapable of issuing an EAS alert without human intervention. Based on a complaint it received last April, agents from the Commission's San Juan office inspected WVID-FM in Anasco, Puerto Rico. At that time, the station personnel demonstrated to the agents that the EAS equipment couldn't transmit an emergency message without someone manually reducing the on-air programming volume down to zero or mute. The station employee also told the agents that he believed the equipment had needed manual intervention since at least September 2011. Now, in issuing the proposed monetary forfeiture, the FCC notes that all stations must ensure that EAS encoders, decoders, attention signal generating and receiving equipment is installed and operational so that the monitoring and transmitting functions are available when the station is operating. When a station is unattended, the rules require stations to use automatic systems to interrupt programming to transmit an alert. WVID is only staffed from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. and unattended overnight. Centro Colegial Cristiano is the owner of WVID-FM and was given the customary 30 days to appeal or pay the fine. It also has the same amount of time to submit a sworn statement to the San Juan office certifying that its EAS equipment is now fully operational when the station is unattended. A new way to alert the deaf and hard of hearing to oncoming disaster situations may soon be on its way. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Imby, K3TZD, is here with the details.
The trade newsletter Radio World reports that NPR Labs personnel hope to begin a project that demonstrates an emergency alerting system for the deaf and hard of hearing population of the United States. This using broadcast radio as the transmission medium. The end goal of this research is to develop a deaf-accessible radio receiver with a large text display and bright flashing lights. This, in turn, could alert the user of the potential threat to life and property. Rich Rary is the NPR Labs Manager of Strategic Technology Applications. He told Radio World that there are currently some AM radios with aural warnings and FM HD receivers that have very small text displays but without accessible warning mechanisms. He says that the aim of NPR Labs is to create a receiver that is useful for the deaf and hard of hearing people, which will also be helpful for alerting the general public as well. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
You can read the entire report of this potentially life-saving project online at tinyurl.com/emergency-alerts-4-the-deaf. If you're a podcaster or thinking of becoming a podcaster, even on a very small scale, then it's worth your time to read an article on who owns the rights to the term podcasting that appeared in a recent issue of the Cron.Business report. In a nutshell, it appears as if the term podcast is not generic as most people might think. Rather, it is a patented system owned by a company called Personal Audio LLC that developed it and other internet streaming back in 1996. And now Personal Audio LLC has decided to assert its rights by going after both podcast content creators as well as podcast distributors. So far, it has won every case that has gone to trial. Even Apple has lost to them. In that case, a jury awarded Personal Audio LLC an $8 million judgment plus $4 million in interest for infringing on the company's The Playlist patent. So if you run a podcast or are thinking of creating one, you might want to take a few moments to read the story at tinyurl.com/podcast-patent and then talk to a knowledgeable patent attorney before proceeding or continuing your podcasting journey. It could theoretically save you every penny you ever will make or have saved. The San Francisco Chronicle reports that an unnamed Oakland resident has been arrested for allegedly shining a laser at two aircraft hovering over the scene of a shooting on Monday, January 21st. The 40-year-old man is alleged to have aimed a red laser several times at a KGO television helicopter as it flew about 1,000 feet over the scene of the incident in which an undercover Oakland officer was shot in the arm. The man is also alleged to have shined the laser at a California Highway Patrol fixed-wing aircraft that was circling at about 3,500 feet. Thankfully, no one aboard either aircraft was injured. Under Title 18, Subpart 39A, whoever knowingly aims the beam of a laser pointer at an aircraft in the jurisdiction of the United States or at the flight path of such an aircraft shall be fined or imprisoned for up to 5 years or both. The coalition of broadcasters willing to sell spectrum rights has grown to 39 major market stations. This according to comments filed to the FCC by the Expanding Opportunities for Broadcasters Coalition. The trade group also wants the regulatory agency to make the auction as attractive as possible by not limiting wireless bidders or which stations can share spectrum. The coalition was formed because the principal broadcast trade association, the National Association of Broadcasters, is focusing on making sure the auctions hold harmless broadcasters who are not selling and want to remain in the business. The coalition members don't have to identify themselves publicly because of the obvious competitive and operational issues related to publicizing their willingness to sell. However, they are reporting pushing the FCC to reclaim at least 100 megahertz of spectrum. The deadline for comment on the FCC's framework for broadcast incentive auctions was January 25th. Reply comments are due in March. CQ Magazine will be adding a monthly international news column called CQ Worldwide as of its April edition. The new column will be coordinated by the new international editor Tom Smirk, AA6TS. Smirk lives in Dulzura, California, and has been active in ham radio since 1988. He's active in Ares, Skywarn, RACES, California Disaster Corps, and CERT, and is a volunteer examiner as well. For the past 25 years, he has taught business information technology for the San Diego Community College District. Hams with news of events and activities outside the United States can contact Smirk by email to aa6ts@cq-amateur-radio.com. More Dayton Hamvention-related news this week. This in the announcement by the Quarter Century Wireless Association that it will be holding QCWA Banquet on Friday, May 17th at the Dayton Airport Holiday Inn. The dinner begins at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The after-dinner speaker will be James Crabtree with a presentation on Lincoln. Cost is $25 per person. Reservations and payment go to Jerry Ragland, WA8BOB, 409 Park Avenue, Franklin, Ohio, 45005. Registration is now open for the 39th Annual Eastern VHF, UHF, and Microwave Conference to be held April 26th through the 28th at the Baymont Inn and Suites in Manchester, Connecticut. This year's program includes numerous talks and presentations for those who enjoy operating in the world above 50 megahertz. The yearly get-together is sponsored by the Northeast Weak Signal Group. More information, including registration and hotel information, can be found at www.newsvhf.com/vhfconf.html. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. Australia's University of Adelaide computer scientists are leading a project to develop a novel sensor system to aid senior citizens, one that would help older people to keep living independently and safely in their homes. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, is here with the details.
To accomplish this far-reaching goal of aiding the senior citizen community, researchers down under are adapting radio frequency identification, better known as RFID, sensor technologies to automatically identify and monitor human activity. This, in turn, makes it possible to determine if an individual's normal routine is being maintained so that timely assistance can be provided if it's needed. Although RFID technology has been around since World War II and is in common use today in applications such as anti-shoplifting and vehicle identification at toll road collection points, its potential use in interpreting human activity remains largely in the laboratory. The chief investigator for this project is Dr. Michael Shang at the University of Adelaide. He says that this work will be among the first few projects in the world connecting large-scale common-sense reasoning and automatic human activity recognition. In addition, the system will be low cost and unobtrusive and without the privacy issues and intensive monitoring of video surveillance. There will be no need for older people to wear anything or turn anything on or off. In the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
The technology will be first investigated in a laboratory setting and then in hospital trials with geriatric patients. More about this possible new use for RFID is online at tinyurl.com/senior-citizen-RFID. A new animated video has been released that tells the story of the UK Space Agency's first CubeSat UCube-1 slated to launch in the third quarter of 2013. UCube-1 will carry a set of AMSAT UK FunCube transponder boards to provide a 435 to 445 MHz linear transponder and a 1200 BPS BPSK beacon for educational outreach. For more information on FunCube and a link to the video, please take your web browser to www.amsat-uk.org. Shortwave radio writer Kim Andrew Elliott advises that a special short-term amateur radio station with the call sign PH00ZWAT was active January 26th and 27th UTC time. This from the former Radio Netherlands Flevoland antenna site near the town of Zeewolde in the Netherlands. The operators were reported to be using relatively low power, feeding the various curtain-type directional rays at 120 meters height on the various high-frequency amateur radio band. According to Jonathan Marks, G8WGN, there have been several events like this. The first was in February 1985, when special event station PA6FLD took to the airwaves. Video of that operation was included in the ARRL film The New World of Amateur Radio, produced and hosted by the late Roy Neal, K6DUE. NDX word that W1USN, AA1M, and W1SSR will be on the air stroke PJ2 from Curacao between March the 8th and the 22nd. Their activity will be on 160 through 10 meters using CW, SSB, PSK, and RIDI. QSL via their home call signs, either direct or by the Bureau. Members of the WestNet DX group will once again be active as EJ7NET from the Aran Islands between May 10th and the 15th. Operations on all HF bands and modes. QSL via Logbook of the World or direct to EI6FR. No EQSL or Bureau QSLs will be accepted for this operation. DF7ZS will again be on the air from Aruba between March 26th and April 3rd. Activity will include the CQ Worldwide WPX SSB contest from March 30th through the 31st as a single operator all-band entry. Some casual operations will take place before and after the contest on 17 and 12 meters, QSL via his home call sign. PA0FAW says he will be operating with a special call sign PF100ZOOO between February 1st and the 28th. This activity is to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the Arnhem Zoo. Operations will mainly be CW and SSB with some digital modes. QSL via PA0FAW, either direct, via the Bureau, or electronically using EQSL. SWL reports are also welcome and appreciated. Lastly, 10 operators from the Oceana DX Group will be operational from Norfolk Island between May 3rd and the 13th as VK9NT. The group plans to have 4 stations covering all bands 80 through 10 meters on CW, SSB, and RTTY. An online QSL request service will be available for bureau and direct cards on ClubLog, which is the preferred method, or direct to VK2CA. And finally this week, the story of a young inventor who is already leaving a very positive mark on society. Here's David Black, KB4KCH, with the rest of the story.
Kelvin Doe is not a ham radio operator, but he's being called the wonder of Sierra Leone, and with good reason. This is because the 15-year-old, who recently won a trip to visit the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, taught himself how to build generators, batteries, and FM radios using parts he found in the trash. And in the best tradition of the maker and hacker movement, he does it using things that would have otherwise been thrown out, and with almost no formal training, turns them into useful products. Doe's inventions are especially valuable in his hometown, where, according to Kelvin, the lights there only turn on about once a week. Kelvin builds batteries and generators to provide electricity for his family. He also uses his homemade gear to operate a successful radio station where he is known as DJ Focus. Kelvin says he hopes to use his radio station as a way for the youth in Sierra Leone to debate about issues in their area. He says he plans to build a windmill generator to provide more stable electricity for his town. Kelvin Doe visited MIT as part of the university's Visiting Practitioners Program. The syllabus allows inventors to use MIT's plentiful resources and perform their own research in the school's labs. Kelvin Doe became the youngest ever visiting practitioner after winning the Innovate Sloan Challenge. Innovate Sloan runs a program that asks young citizens of that nation to creatively come up with solutions to problems facing their community.
I'm David Black, KB4KCH, from the Southeast Bureau in Birmingham, Alabama.
In our view, it's young people like Kelvin Doe who will be the ones who will truly advance all of mankind in the years and decades to come, and the world really needs a lot more like him. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Before we go, a note to those of you who obtained these newscasts over the 661-296-2407 dial-up line. While we have decided to keep it in service a while longer, it will be down for equipment maintenance from February 4th through the 12th or thereabouts. Parts are getting really scarce for the antique gear used to feed the phone line, so we must do what we can to keep things going. If you are a phone access user, please make alternate arrangements to obtain the newscast until we can return the system to operation. Also, a reminder that the Dayton Hamvention is seeking nominations for its 2013 Radio Amateur of the Year, Technical Achievement, Special Achievement, and the Radio Club of the Year awards. The cutoff date to submit nominations is February 15th. More information and official nominating forms are now online at www.hamvention.org/awards.php. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Dameron, NATMW in Charleston, West Virginia, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2013, all rights reserved.